มวยไทยคือชีวิต
From our studios in New York City and Miami, Florida You are listening to The Striking Corner With Eric Rivera and Vinny Scotto Your source for Muay Thai and kickboxing news worldwide
All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Striking Corner. I am your host, Eric Rivera. And with me, as always, all the way from New York, Staten Island, New York, is my good friend, Vinny Scotto. What is going on, man?
Not much. What's up, man? I just want to start out by saying, letting all of you know, I want you to join my quest for 10,000 followers on Instagram. So you can do that by following me on Instagram, which is Vinny Scotto, VinnyScotto. And that's pretty much it. So if you have to get in touch with me for any reason whatsoever, that's the only form of contact I want.
Wow, man. You really are trying to push this Instagram thing.
Yeah, yeah. Why not?
Damn. It's for no reason.
Like, I don't really care about fame or anything. I don't know. I just want 10,000 followers. And I'm not even going to post anything to excite you. You know, I'm not gonna flood your feeds with a bunch of garbage. Just follow me for the hell of it.
All right. Sounds good. All right. First of all, just to get it out of the way, what is it that we have? Okay. We have our shirts on sale at thestrikingcorner.com. We have our Champ Up shirts and our Buy a Vowel tee on sale right now for $14.95 each at strikingcorner.com. And proceeds will go to the USMF, the United States Muay Thai Federation, which is obviously what we've been touting for the last couple of podcasts or many podcasts now, helping the growth of the United States of United Muay Thai in America and the U.S. Muay Thai team all across the world, basically trying to get them to, you know, to all of these competitions worldwide and help them out. They are currently at the Pan Americans. They're going to start at fighting at the Pan Ams. I know some of them left today or this weekend. So good luck to all of them out there. And also shout out to 3 Leopard Liniment. Check out 3 Leopard Liniment. It is some of the best liniment that you can buy, I believe. I really like it. It's probably the strongest one that I feel. And I like it. Out of all of them that you can get, check them out, 3leopard.com. We use them. We love their stuff. They've been supporters of the podcast, so check them out at 3leopard.com and use the promo code STRIKING for 15% off. That's about it on our end. We wanted to kind of go quickly because we actually have our guest here on the line already, and he's got a limited time, but I think you're going to be pretty it's a really cool guest. I'm not going to introduce him here. I'll introduce him in a second. And something, a different perspective for our listeners here on The Striking Corner. So we'll be right back.
The Striking Corner.
All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Striking Corner. And as we had mentioned in the intro of the podcast, we have a special guest on the line today, somebody who's very, it's actually different. It's cool to bring somebody from different perspectives of the combat sports landscape. That's what we want to do with the Striking Corner always, have different opinions, why the sport is growing, what's holding it back, just open conversation to a lot of interesting people. And then one of those interesting people today is somebody we've heard a lot about. Vinny has spoken to him on many occasions. He is a business owner in this growing combat sports landscape. He is the owner of Combat Corner. How are you, Dan LeSavage?
Yeah, LeSavage. That's correct pronunciation.
Okay.
Thanks, Eric, Vinny, having me. So.
Yeah, man. So, you know, we know a lot of mutual people that have, you know, talked really well about your gear and about, the stuff that you make. And obviously Combat Corner, I know you sponsor different gyms or work with different gyms and with different fighters. And so our idea of having you on today is really to get your perspective, maybe on a business side perspective of, you know, how the sport is evolving. But before we get into all of that, give us a little bit of your background in combat sports and why you decided to make, you know, what compelled you to go in this direction of starting your own, you know, equipment line.
Sure. I mean, starting way back, I was like little kid, 5 years old, loved like Ninja Turtles, stuff like that. I don't know. You know, that born in the early 80s. So, you know, I went and did a Taekwondo trial class, you know, two lessons and a uniform for $19.99. Mm-hmm. Thought it was great, you know, but then my mom was like, that's like $1,200 a year. And he's like, you'll be a black belt in 4 years. My mom's like, nah. So basically we had about a 10-year gap there between when I got back into martial arts. So I was about 18 when I started actually training. I found a gym. I started at Duke Rufus's gym. I started doing Thai boxing and kickboxing. That's how I actually started. And okay. Actually my career was more MMA based, but I've fought as an amateur in Thai boxing. I've had a professional Thai boxing fight. I boxed as an amateur in USA boxing. But most of my career was focused on MMA. I had, I don't remember how many amateur fights I had, but maybe like 6 or 7, not a lot. Amateur MMA back then was pretty much professional MMA, but you didn't get paid. Mm-hmm. It's pretty close to that today anyways, but yeah. And then I had, I think, about 11 professional fights. Okay. So, and through in the middle of that, I'd broken my jaw and it was wired shut. It was horrible. And that's actually when I started this company. So I started this company in 07. It was in between being able to fight. I couldn't make any money. So it was like me and Duke were actually driving around and talking about, you know, stores and this and that. And I was always kind of selling stuff. I would sell stuff online, and even since I was like 15, 16 years old, was always finding stuff to sell on like eBay, this and that. And basically just the idea of actually opening a brick and mortar store that catered to fighting. And, you know, 3 weeks later we were open. So it was like just this idea, and with really no planning other than finding a place and getting a good accountant, which is probably the most important thing a business can do right away, is get a good accountant. And we opened. So with really no money, if you came into our store, we had like 50 t-shirts and like 8 pairs of gloves. Yeah. So,
but you started, you started selling other people's brands first, correct?
Exactly. We were a retailer. We didn't make any of our own stuff. But that's a great way to get into actually creating your own stuff, is to know what other people are doing, what's selling, what customers like, in an unbiased way. Because really, if someone came in and said, hey, this was a piece of shit, I was like, okay, let's switch you out to something else. It wasn't like, I didn't take it personal. Mm-hmm. You know, now when someone's like, this product sucks and it's mine, I'm like, fuck you. But, you know, but you know, obviously I have to absorb that as well. And then I take that after that initial FU, then it's like, maybe it does suck and maybe I need to address what's going on with this and, you know, either get rid of it or fix the issues. Mm-hmm. So, you know, having that, insight of seeing what the other companies were doing, where they were lacking, how they were selling, how they were dealing with, you know, gyms and schools, how they were dealing direct to consumer, gave us a ton of, you know, knowledge to be able to do well with our own, because there was a ton of brands back then, a lot of specifically targeted at the MMA community, mostly, you know, apparel based, and mm-hmm. they're all gone now. I mean, you can't even probably name 5 on, you know, a single hand that are still around from that. Like, I guess, I don't know if you say like golden era of MMA or, you know,
yeah, that initial explosion. Exploded. Yeah. When it blew up, I remember, I mean, and that's one thing that we've seen. I think it's kind of something that is a norm when it comes to like the popularity of things. I mean, you're seeing it. I mean, obviously we cater to the Muay Thai and kickboxing community, but we mention all forms of striking and all forms of combat. But, you know, with the growth of Muay Thai and kickboxing right now, you're seeing a kind of growth of like Muay Thai brands popping out. Not as much as MMA though, because MMA just exploded. I remember you had tons of brands. I mean, and there were so many retailers and things like that. And you're right. So, some just completely disappeared and others were able to, I guess, weather the storm, you know? But yeah, I mean, that's pretty interesting to touch on another point. So you've been around pretty much, you would say, since the beginning, at least searching and looking and kind of, you know, you were selling other people's things, and before you actually established yourself as Combat Corner. When did you make that turn to start saying, what point did it get to where you were like, you know what, I really want to start selling our own stuff?
Well, I realistically, when I opened the place, the idea of that always was there, but mm-hmm. I just didn't know anything about it. I didn't know how, I didn't know what it took. Mm-hmm. And So, I mean, we opened in 07, and I think after like about 9 months is when we sampled our first product. Mm-hmm. And they sucked. They were not good. and they were, you know, they were like what 99% of the brands do now, which is take someone else's product and change the design looks and put their logo on it. Yeah. That is not who we are at all at this point in time. But in the beginning, that's what we did. And that's what pretty much, like I said, everyone who exists does now. Even the big companies, you know, they're just copying other people's shit. So, you know, that's what we did in the beginning. And, you know, we were a house brand. It was just an affordable product to buy besides, you know, a name brand, let's say. So we went from being that economy affordable house brand to now, you know, a real brand in itself. That's actually the reverse way of building a premium brand. but we've been able to achieve it by focusing on the products themselves and listening to our customer base and really meeting expectations of what you expect when you're paying a premium price for a product. Like you said, there's all sorts of, specifically in the Thai boxing community, brands that are popping up that are now doing, you know, the handmade in Thailand products, that are USA based. There's been some over time that have done it. We're not the first by any means, but I would say we're one of the earlier ones that in this current time that have been making them and making them at a high level. So
Do you see that over the past, you know, year or so that your Thai line has been getting better? You've been producing more?
The Thai line itself, I'm always like, almost every order we do, I'll design some new products, come up with something new that I want to do. So it's not like a stagnant line. We'll also get rid of products if I don't really like them or I want to move on from them. But the line has always been top notch. Like everything we produced out of our Thai factory, which is a very small factory, and we're the only brand that produces out of there with adult products that are sold anywhere, you know, out of this factory. So a lot of other brands share the same factories, so it's the same product just with different branding. Our product is not the same as anyone else's when we're talking about the HMIT line.
Well, I mean, so, not necessarily the products you're making. I mean, in the sense of your customer base. Like over the past few years, have you seen that it's been growing with the growth of the Muay Thai community? Because, you know, it is starting to catch on and grow a little bit more over the past couple of years.
For sure. Definitely. I mean, we've been going to the TBA for a little bit. We sponsored the TBA the last 2 years in a row. Mm-hmm. We just did the WKA that they just had where we sent out some equipment. But at like TBA in general, just the acknowledgement and specifically in the Thai boxing community, the reach that we have and what people think about our products, that perception is really high right now. And I owe it to a lot of the coaches that are in the industry that have accepted our brand, you know, because a lot of traditionalists are like, we only use Twins, we only use, you know, Fairtex, or even newer brand like Top King, or, you know, whatever it may be. But, you know, true Thai brands that are not only made in Thailand, but owned by Thai companies and things like that. So, you know, for some of these other guys to be like, you know, okay, this is a US based company, they're making stuff in Thailand at the same level or even higher than some of those brands, and to, you know, not only use it in their own place, but spread the word and help us grow. It's been great. You know, a lot of gyms are really helping us out in that way.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely on the Combat Corner bandwagon because I've been now selling your stuff in my gym, and so far everyone loves it. I love it. It's honestly my favorite pair of gloves that I've used in a while. So I'm like I said, I'm on the bandwagon.
Yeah. I mean,
Welcome aboard.
I need, you know, and to be fair and honest, obviously, I want to be, you know, I haven't purchased a pair of Combat Corner.
Why not, man? Come on.
he's waiting for a free pair.
No. Here's what it is. And it's funny that you touched on it because I think, you know, Muay Thai has been for a long time. There's many fans of the Muay Thai game, and I've been there as well, that have been accused of being, you know, the Muay Thai snobbery that we can say. And I understand it from a point of view that people want to, you know, when I went to Thailand for the first time to train and everything, I came back and it was like, you know, dude, I was whying everybody and, you know, I was trying to follow the same regimen I followed in Thailand, and I was buying everything Thai. And I kind of understand the allure of it, you know, because that's what people, you know, they think that obviously if it's coming from Thailand, it's going to be tried and true and it's going to be the best product ever. And I used to be what you that type that you described, Dan, which was, you know, I always wanted the Twins, the Windy, the you know, Fairtex, all of that type of stuff, where I was like, where it said, you know, made in Thailand and it was a Thai brand. Although now what you're seeing is, and you explained it really well, is that you can do that. Like, your stuff is handmade in Thailand, but it is an American company behind it, although you're producing it over there. And I think it's really, the thing that's cool is, I think that there's this, people need to get past that sort of, that Muay Thai snobbery, I would say, and be like, you know, only things from Thailand are good. You know, we're doing, you know, there was that time where people were only watching Muay Thai, and like, anytime a Thai fighter came to the United States, it was like an automatic, like, everybody would go for the Thai fighter, and the American fighter was kind of secondary. There was a lot of that because we weren't seen at the same level at that point. But I think with the growth of the sport and how good this, many of our American based fighters are getting, it's really a good time for, you know, and we're, Vinny and I have been doing this a lot, which is promoting the American Muay Thai scene and trying to build the, you know, build that awareness of how the sport is growing. And now having a product that is made in the United States, but with the same, you know, quality standards of these Thai brands or even better, you know, it's growing that American Muay Thai mindset. And I think we need to do that a little bit more and realize that we're not far behind anymore. And I think we're catching up, and we're doing well in the fighting standpoint, but in the equipment standpoint, we are already, you know, we have top quality stuff, you know?
Right. I mean, you mix it all together with the movement that's going on anyways, with the YDL and then Michael Corley and everything everyone's kind of doing, on the circuit to grow Muay Thai from an earlier age, but then also raise the bar on what's being done here, even with adults. Mm-hmm. The idea of that inferiority complex, you know, it really doesn't matter where you're from if you have the proper, you know, training, proper coaching. Great fighters can be developed in any country. I mean, it can shift quickly. So I'm looking forward to the U.S. being a more dominant force on an international level in Muay Thai. Yeah. You know, so.
Yeah, you know, and I wanted to say this about that, like the whole kind of Muay Thai where it was, people were so focused on Thailand. Because I remember when I was in Thailand and I was training and I was talking to one of the Thai trainers, and, you know, in his limited English, but he was still pretty good, and he kind of explained it, and he was saying, you know, in a lot of ways, the Thais don't really care. I mean, they're not, it's not like a lot of traditional martial arts where they're super hardcore about, you know, about following a certain path in a certain way. They were a lot more open-minded than we lead people on to believe here in the United States. Like, when I went to Thailand and I trained, they weren't like super strict on, you know, you have to do the Y crew, you have to do the bow, you have to do all these things. It was really, they were super just excited that you wanted to come to Thailand and learn Muay Thai, you know? And I remember him telling me that his pride in teaching me Muay Thai was that, he was like, when you go back to America and you teach other people Thai boxing, it doesn't matter that you're an American teaching Thai boxing. You are, for us, passing on a Thai thing, you know, which is always going to be, like, Muay Thai is always going to be a Thai sport. But it doesn't mean that, you know, everything that revolves around it has to be completely, you know, Thai culture. You know, it's just, this is this already the sport itself is Thai, and now, you know, now we're bringing in little things where, you know, we can take it on and make it, you know, we're still paying respects to it, but we are having, you know, top quality American fighters, and that all comes down to the training, and the equipment doesn't have to always be made in Thailand, because I think they could care less as long as everybody's trained well and doing Muay Thai the way they feel Muay Thai should be, you know. So that's kind of like going on from that point.
For sure. For sure. I agree with all that. And like, back to the equipment stuff you were talking about is if this stuff is good, it's good. It doesn't matter, you know, what the brand name is on it. Of course, when it comes down to being a fashionista of Muay Thai brands and things like that, you want to get, you know, your colors matching. You want to have your fancy this and fancy that. And I get that, you know, looks and appeal are important, but at the end of the day, you know, the actual product itself is what's important to high-level athletes who need a product that can perform. And, you know, say a gym like Vinny's, though, if you got, you know, people coming in that are just starting, they're not going to need to have that most premium, expensive cowhide, you know, Thai-made product. You know, they're going to be able to use a more cost-effective product. And our thing was, we're going to make not only cost-effective products, but we're going to make them at a high level as well. It's just they're going to be made out of a little bit less expensive materials. So it's never been a thing where we're like, we're going to make this line awesome and this line shit. It was like, we're going to make this line awesome and we're going to make this line as awesome as it can be out of these materials, and this line as awesome as it can be out of this material. Mm. So we had, so we could kind of work with anyone at any price point. And then when with the gyms and schools is being able to enroll people and have proper equipment on them without, you know, them breaking the bank. Because just like when I started, when I tried to do taekwondo when I was a little kid, it was like my parents couldn't afford that, so I just didn't do it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and especially like new people at the beginning, just walking into a gym for the first time, they don't really know the difference between made in Thailand, made in China, made in Pakistan, or cowhide leather or synthetic leather. They don't really know the difference. All they know is I need a pair of gloves and I don't really want to spend a lot of money on it because I'm just starting. Mm-hmm. So what I try to do when people walk in the gym is I try to, even if they don't want to buy from me, because some people are hesitant because they think I'm just trying to make more money off of them, but that's not the case. So I explain to them, like, you know, you need a good quality product. If you want to go buy something on your own, be my guest, but I will give them a list of brands to stay away from. Because I know that.
What are some of those?
I don't want to say that. Yeah. Well, let's just say Yokow. Because, you know, fuck Yokow. But anyway, so that goes back to last podcast. But I just, like, I tell people to stay away from certain brands because I've seen people come in and say, oh, my wrist hurts. But they're using some shitty ass gloves that I told them not to get in the first place. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, well, let me see what gloves you're using. They show me and I'll say, well, that's why your wrist hurts, you know, because you're using a shitty pair of gloves. it all comes down to protection also. Like, you need to make sure you have good equipment that's going to protect your hands, your wrist, your shins, your ankles, everything.
Yeah. Sparring partners.
Yeah.
Well, don't show up with those Everlast with the elastic wrist from Dick's for like $9.99 to spar with.
God, yeah. Those are the worst.
Yeah. I mean, I think it all comes down to, because my dad always has this saying, and he's like, you know, when anytime we're working on things in the house or whatever like that, anything like that, and it's like, when you don't have the right tool, things take twice as long. You know, when you have the right tool to build anything, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be an easier job. So, and in a lot of ways, I think one of the things that we push is, at least that I've pushed on a lot of the guys that ask me when I go to my gym and everything like that, is, and they ask me questions about what gloves they should buy, it's always like, you know, how, you know, if you really are invested in the sport, then you do want to invest in a quality pair of gloves or quality gear that would, because it'll last you longer than, you know, let's say you buying those $9.99 gloves and like every month, if you continue on training every month, they're breaking and falling apart, then you're going to end up spending a shitload of money anyway. You might as well invest in something quality that's going to last you longer. So moving on from this, you know, the talk of the equipment and everything like this, Dan, I wanted to ask you, like, in your experience, cause you've done Muay Thai as an amateur, you've done MMA as an amateur, then you even, you know, took it further and went into fighting MMA as a pro. Talk to me a little bit.
I had one pro Muay Thai fight too.
Oh, and one pro Muay Thai fight.
One. I got one.
I mean, but talk to me, you know, a little bit, because the cool thing that I didn't know about, and we talked about earlier in the show, was you've kind of been involved, let's say, in the business of combat sports since that initial explosion. Then it's kind of died down. Obviously, the UFC has its own thing now, where, you know, they're running with one sponsor, you know, one type of equipment. You know, talk to me a little bit about, in your opinion, about how combat sports has grown and shifted since you first started, and what do you feel about the growth of combat sports? Well, it could be both MMA and Muay Thai, like right now in the United States, not only from your business perspective, but from a personal perspective. I mean, is it headed in the right direction? I know there's been ups and downs. You know, what is your kind of assessment of what's going on, being, you know, that you've been involved because of your business, you've been involved with a lot of people, let's say, really in the know, you know?
Well, I mean, the growth overall has been insane across the board when you're talking about, you know, MMA, Thai boxing, and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which obviously are like kind of the cornerstones of MMA in general. Thai boxing and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, mix that with some wrestling, you know, that's the three, you know, forefather martial arts of MMA, I think. But, you know, when I started, there wasn't really MMA gyms. It was I would go here to do jujitsu. I would go there to do Thai boxing. I might go there and do some boxing. I might, you know, go to a high school and wrestle, you know, things like that. But now you have gyms that are pure MMA gyms, and then you have your pure BJJ gyms, pure Thai boxing gyms, whatever it may be. And I think the fact that, you know, there's been more of a niche focus for these gyms, the ones that have more focus, even if they are an MMA school, they're going to focus more on MMA. Sure, they might have, you know, a cardio kickboxing program, or they might have, you know, a jiu-jitsu program, but they know that our focus is MMA. Or if you're a kickboxing school, your focus is kickboxing. Do you have those other thing add-ons, and you're making money at your gym with those other things? Sure. But I think the focus has allowed each individual sport to grow in a huge way. So like MMA specifically, you know, obviously is the biggest as far as, you know, nationwide with fans and TV and all this stuff, but it's the least focused as far as, you know, when you go to a show, you see different people, you see people that know absolutely nothing about the sport. But I was just at like a pro grappling event, which there's been a boom of pro grappling events in the past 2 years. Mm. And basically everybody there is, you know, a fan and knows about the sport. You go to, like, I was at Glory a couple weeks ago when they were in Chicago, and, you know, I run into everyone I know. I see everyone. Everyone knows about the sport. Everyone knows, you know, who the fighters are and stuff like that. You go to an MMA card, you go to the UFC, and most of the time half the people don't even know who it is. They just know they're at the UFC. Mm. So, but I do believe all of them are continuing to grow. MMA is kind of following that, I think, boxing model to a degree. It's gonna go that route, but still working as much of the kind of WWE behind the scenes theatrics to help kind of build the sport. Mm-hmm. And that's where boxing's lacking recently, I thought, on the Triple G Canelo card, is like the promo work they did for that fight was horrible. Mm-hmm. I was watching it, what De La Hoya put together. I wasn't impressed by that at all. And I what did the numbers end up being on that buy? It was still good. It was like 1.3 million or something like that. Mm-hmm. But you follow a card that did 6.5 million, you know, and with the biggest real fight only coming in at 1.3, that's kind of a disappointment. So, but as far as the growth of all of them, I mean, those are still the biggest boxing fights, you know, in the last 10 years, to have two cards within a 1 month period to do well over a million buys. So, you know, looking at, you know, the promoter end, looking at the gym end, looking at, you know, the consumer end, it's all continuing to grow in almost all those sports across the board. So,
yeah, I mean, and it is, I mean, it's pretty amazing, but I feel like, you know, there's been ups and downs. Obviously you talked about theatrics. I've never been one for the entire theatrics, but, you know, I know that they're, a lot of times they're necessary. I think in the last card, just to touch on, you know, Triple G and Canelo, you also have two guys that aren't native English speakers, you know, and it's kind of different. But I mean, and also they're kind of both, I would say, real kind of like classy dudes, you know.
Yeah, classy and respectful. Respectful. They don't create controversy versus each other because they're not saying stupid shit. But
yeah,
it seems like most people want guys to say stupid stuff to each back and forth, or like, you know, the fascination with like a Mike Tyson is just like ferocity and him like saying crazy shit. You know, that's people want stuff like that. And when you're talking about the general public, because that's what's getting general media to pay attention. You know, the media outside of the fight game really doesn't pay attention when there's not some sort of controversy or drama, even if you call it a drama show and you don't quite create much of a drama show. But, you know, besides for the scoring on the fight. But, you know.
That's what this country thrives on, is drama, which is why there's, you know, such a boom in reality TV.
Oh, my God, I hate it.
Yeah, it's insane.
But I mean, that's what it's always been. I mean, and I feel like that ties into obviously the growth and maybe I wouldn't say stagnant, because I believe Muay Thai is growing, but it's growing at a slower pace than, let's say, kickboxing, obviously than MMA, because there's those theatrics, and Muay Thai still has that. I mean, not to say MMA is in martial arts, obviously, but it's, you know, Muay Thai still has that sort of traditional martial arts mindset. There's a lot of respect involved. There's still that idea of, like, you know, the culture around Muay Thai is very tight-knit. The community is very tight-knit. You won't hear a lot of Muay Thai fighters talk trash to one another. And so I think it's hard in that sense for a lot of Americans to latch on, because this is one thing that you touched on, Dan, which I think was really important. You're saying, you know, a lot of people go to a UFC event and they don't even care much about the fighters or who's on the card. They don't even know them that much. They might not even know the sport that much. They just know that they're at a UFC event, you know? And that to me talks to me a lot about, you know, what we're discussing today, that we're discussing branding and your brand and, you know, different combat sports brand. It's that UFC sort of positioned itself where it's almost like the sport is, I mean, there's still people that say they do UFC, you know, they train UFC, you know, you know, there's still people that go out.
All and, the best ones train UFC. Everyone knows
that. Yeah. You know, so there's still people who say that, you know, or they say, oh, you do UFC. Like if you do, like if you, you know, if you tell them that you train or anything like that. So it's almost like it's set itself up. The UFC is pretty amazing to me in one sense, is that it's set itself up almost as a brand outside of just being martial arts. It is like a brand that people follow. You know,
yeah, it's,
like,
it's Kleenex. It's
yeah,
Kleenex.
Exactly. It's Velcro, like it's like an Adidas or a Nike where you don't necessarily care about, like, you, let's say Nike might do soccer or Adidas might do this or do hundreds of different sports, but you might just buy the stuff because you like how it looks. It doesn't necessarily mean you do any of the sports that it's involved in. It's almost become, that's kind of what the UFC has become in a lot of ways, where, you know, you see celebrities there and it's a place to be seen and things like that. Whereas in Muay Thai and kickboxing, it's not there yet. You were talking like you meet friends and everybody knows the sport, and you know, you the crowd knows what they're looking at. They're very educated. That's all good and you know, awesome and great and grand. But I think at the end of the day, we do need to, for Muay Thai, like especially Vinny and I who focus on Muay Thai and kickboxing, we do need to have those. Unfortunately, we do need to have those somewhat crazy, we don't give a shit who's fighting, I just want to have a beer and watch two people punch themselves, punch each other in the face. That's what I want to see, you know, and I just want the Neanderthal average, the fan that everybody hates, the Buffalo Wild Wings know-it-all guy. We don't have that in Muay Thai in a large extent. And those guys at the end of the day are, you know, here in America are the ones who pay a lot of the shows, you know, and the tickets. Well,
I think so. Live Muay Thai or live kickboxing in person is the best show to watch in person. I think, you know, obviously TV is, I'd rather watch MMA on TV than I would live in person, but a Muay Thai show, you can see great. It's in a ring. I prefer rings over cages any day. I mean, even in my MMA career, I fought in more rings than I did at cages. Cause back in the day, everyone fought in rings still. But for a live show, you know, they got to get people out to these events. And when it comes down to, you know, the internal fighting within kickboxing and Muay Thai and styles and shit like that, getting that under control. And I know everyone's been talking about that for years, but really, the rule style really should be consolidated into like maybe one or two max, not having like all these different styles. And really people that are purists on their style need to give it up and just, for the betterment of the sport, is choose what, you know, people are going to fight. Like in the United States, like, okay, we're going to focus on full rules Muay Thai, or we're going to do this international rules, whatever, pick it. Whatever. But I do think cards can be mixed, and it's not a huge deal. Cause most people don't really care as they're watching it. It's just that if you have guys coming out with pants on and then you have guys coming out with boots on and this and that, it's like, you know, you're not going to mix those two. Right. So, you know, as a purist, I think, you know, pure Muay Thai rules is where it's at. But, you know, really there's only one promotion doing that on a national level right now. And they just had a card right on Friday.
Lion Fight. Yeah.
Which I didn't catch, not because I didn't want to, but I don't have access TV. And then I ended up going to this grappling event, but, so I'll watch the replays, you know, but in general, that's the biggest event we have right now. Right.
Yeah, for pro Muay Thai, yeah, that's what we have here.
Yeah, and they even have their issues too. So I mean, it's like, I mean, I don't want to get into it, but I mean, it's like a lot of things too. Like it's just, I think there's growing pains going on either way. Trying to, like you said, consolidate. One thing that's really important, and we always try to stress it here on the show, and we've talked to different people about it, is, you know, it's got to consolidate itself into, like you said, the rule sets. And I think this is where everything that ties into, you know, you guys working with the YDL, working with, you know, the TBA, which is bar none for me, the best, you know, Muay Thai tournament there is, you know, and then you also have the USMTO, which is really good as well. You have all these great events, but it's really about consolidating into one, you know, rule set for Muay Thai. Full rules, let's, you know, say full rules. If you want to have different classes for like amateurs where you limit the elbows or whatever, that's
right,
fine.
For kids and things like that. Yeah,
that,
for
that's
sure.
Understandable. Like,
entry into the sport, you want to limit the rule set. That's great. But I think once you go into the highest level, let's make it full rules. And you know, all the other, the problem is, in my opinion, is a lot of the sanctioning bodies and things like that. They want to have all the rule sets so they can try to get all the different athletes to come out and compete and stuff. But it's like, then you have this weird spread where there's one person in each bracket and one person. I mean, and really, some of these people are okay driving and flying in and not even fighting and getting a championship belt or something like that. Like, to me, that's not what it should be about. And really, if that's why I think TBA does do a good job, because they only do Muay Thai.
And then you can just see it in the numbers of people that attend, you know, now.
Yeah, it's,
I think
they had like 600 people at the last one, that are 600 competitors, I believe. Mm-hmm. Maybe more, I could be wrong, but Pam and Pete do a great job at those events.
Yeah.
And we're glad to be able to be involved with them at that event as well. Mm-hmm. So.
And then, and then besides Muay Thai, I think, you know, the standard of what is technically, you know, the idea of having the K1 style or glory style or whatever you want to call it. We could just call it kickboxing if that's the idea is that we want to call it just one thing, and it should be kickboxing, and it should be that kickboxing is known as, you know, the style that became made famous by Dutch style, you know. You know, and pretty much it's, you know, low kicks and knees and you know, more Western style boxing and three rounds, and it's like, you know, just crazy action, whatever, but it's that style, that rule set, and that those are the two that should exist. You know, you
never want to name a rule set after a promotion. That's what I don't understand. It's okay, we call it K1, and K1 doesn't even do shit anymore. You know what I mean? Like, so we're like, okay, now we're going to call it Glory. So people are confused. Like, why is the name change? Oh, just because it's a new promotion. Like, it shouldn't, you should never name a, that's like the UFC is MMA. That's bullshit. Like, MMA is MMA.
Yeah.
Kickboxing is kickboxing. It's not Glory. It's not K1. It's kickboxing.
Yeah. So, it's like calling Muay Thai rules lion fight rules.
Exactly. It's stupid.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that's where I think the problem is. And I think that's hopefully it's getting, at least I think in the Muay Thai side, what I've seen, and we've been talking with a lot of people from the USMF and Michael Corley and, you know, the different fighters that have fought on there. And I think they're doing a great job in starting to really kind of showcase, hey, listen, we want to fight this rule set, which even they'll call it like IFMA Muay Thai, but it's the closest, obviously it's, IFMA is the organization, or, you know, and the WBC, the WMC, all of these organizations are the original ones that focus on full Thai rules, and they all across, you know, worldwide, that is what other countries are fighting, you know. So it's good that they're consolidating it and saying, look, this is the Muay Thai that if we want to compete on the world stage and the biggest event there is for Muay Thai, this is the stuff we need to know. And that's what you like, you working with the YDL, and it's like getting them used to that rule set from the get-go. And that's how we're going to move into like where now we're going to have, you know, I mean, we already have at the kids level, at the junior level, you know, multiple world champions that are, you know, gold medalists, you know. So it's moving in the correct direction, I think. And it all it needed was that shift to be able to focus on that one rule set that pretty much a large portion of the world is competing in. And and that's where I feel like Muay Thai's, why I feel like it's now, I think we're going to see a better, a bigger growth in it. And I think just other people with promotions, I mean, sorry, not promotions, sanctioning bodies just got to get on board, you know, and be like, you're going to get left behind, or no one's going to fight on your show, or it's not going to, you're not going to get as many people come to the show if you don't kind of like join this movement, which I think is the USMF, and I think they're doing a great job. So, yeah.
Right. And so with Patrick at Valor, he was talking about specifically the age of where kids get started in Muay Thai and how many fights and experience level they have once they are in teen and adult divisions. And that's makes a huge difference. Think about like when they're talking about the other sports, baseball, soccer, whatever it may be, you're going to start young, but it's creating a safe way to be able to do it. Cause you don't want kids at 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old knocking each other out with head kicks and stuff like that. It's just not good for the kid, not good for the sport, not good for anything. So, but you have to give them experience. And, I think that's what they're trying to do there. And it's really going to help. And you'll see it pay dividends in, you know, the next 5, 6, 7 years, as long as they stay focused and the events keep happening and the participation is there. Cause that's what it comes down to in general is it can't be like, well, I don't really like this part of it, so we're not going to participate. It's like nothing's ever perfect. Sometimes you just got to work with what's available.
Oh yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, I, another, you know, coach that we respect very much, he kind of always talks about, you know, there's different shows and the shows have their problems. Let's say when the tournaments, you know, whether it's WKA or IKF or TBA or USMTO, whatever you want to, whichever one you want to go to, like you said, not all of them are going to be perfect. They try to be, I know they try to do their best. I mean, I know pretty much I've talked to a lot of the people behind each one of those shows or know the people behind each one of those shows. And I know they're all in it for the right reasons, you know, but like you said, not everything is going to be perfect. But the coach that I like I said, that he always talks about getting rounds in. So he's always talking about, I just need my guys to get rounds. You know, that's what I need. That's what they need. And so he goes, I can bitch and complain a little bit and talk a little bit and give some feedback. But at the end of the day, that's not going to stop me from going, you know, because at the end of the day, there isn't a lot of opportunities for our fighters to grow. And if you're getting nitpicky with them and start saying, well, I don't want to go here because I don't like so-and-so, I don't go here because I don't like what they do here, then you're actually limiting your fighters too. So that's, I agree with that definitely. And he always said, you know, it's about getting rounds in. There's going to have each event is going to have its little issue. So, but the participation
for sure. And experience is experience as an athlete coming up. The only reason I did box was to gain more ring experiences in something that specifically I hadn't been training for. I remember going to do the amateur boxing fights and maybe training like 3 to 4 weeks of just pure boxing and going and fighting. And I did good. You know, this was like novice entry USA boxing stuff, but it was still good experience when I was an amateur fighter to get that experience. So, to limit yourself, cause you're like, oh man, that place doesn't allow elbows, or this place doesn't allow this. Like, so what, you know, like if it's close and it's convenient for your guys to fight on and you're trying to get them experience, put them in it, especially at an amateur level or, you know, when you feel they're comfortable at least to fight. You don't want to just jam kids in who ain't ready to fight.
Yeah.
But getting time in a competition situation is probably the best way to get better at competing,
yeah,
in my opinion. And then you take what you did poorly at and you adjust it in training and hope you do better next time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and that's it's the tried and true, you know, it's tried and true method. I mean, we always talk, like we go back to this idea of Muay Thai snobbery and looking up to the Thais like as the ultimate, you know, forces to be reckoned with. And the reason they are is because, I mean, they just train all the time and fight all the time. I mean,
every week you're going to fight every week.
That's
right?
That's so. Really what they're doing. And then, and that's why they, you know, you're seeing guys that are like 17 years old and have 150 fights, you know? And that's, you know, obviously we're going to have different things here regulation wise, cause they're not going to let kids fight every week, but at least, you know, it's getting to the point where they're at least, we have to make them more active. Cause I mean, when I was fighting, it was really tough to get, like, you know, fighting sometimes 3 or 4 times a year was like an awesome thing, you know? Mm-hmm. In some people it was 2 was you were lucky to get, you know, and it depends what region you live in too. Like, you know, if you're in California, you're going to have more of a shot to get more activity. If you live in New York, you're going to be there. There's more fights to go to. If you're stuck here in Florida, man, like where I'm at, it's really few and far between, you know. If you're in other areas of the country, there's very limited shows. It's been tough, but at least now I think there's a growth in that. And, you know, that's what we need. We need those getting rounds in, you know? So I wanted to move on from the topic of this, you know, Dan, and go back to talking about combat, you know, Combat Corner and your brand. And I really, I guess something I wanted to talk about was, you know, give me in your way what you feel is unique about, what is unique about the combat sports equipment business, and kind of like, let me, you know, give us some, any juicy details, drama, anything that you faced, where learning experiences, failures and successes of, you know, growing this, your brand in what is a, you know, I'm pretty sure is a unique business.
Yeah, I mean, so specifically within the industry of martial arts, the level of products has gotten better and better. But when you think about it, boxing gloves and stuff like that in general haven't changed much over the course of mm-hmm. however many years. Mostly it's just about styling and whatnot. So really my focus with my company has been, yes, trying to adjust and make the wheel better, because it's pretty much a wheel, you know, you it's hard to make the wheel better than it is. It mm. rotates, you know, yeah. So you got boxing gloves. How are we going to make these better for, say, sparring or for, you know, fighting or whatever it may be? And my specific thing has been a battle about ounce sizes. So yeah. Everyone's very, very specific on what they want a glove to weigh when you're going to go to spar at a gym or whatever. But I can make the most vicious 16-ounce boxing glove there is on the planet if you want it. Yeah. And then I could make the most padded one. I could make an 8-ounce glove have more padding where you need it than a 16-ounce glove that's vicious, you know. So I kind of want to get the industry away from ounce sizing reliance in a sparring situation and more into actual, you know, padding protection when you're sparring, things like that. So like, that's kind of one of my things that I'm working on, and we're doing it because we're actually making products in house. We have a sewing department. We have a sampling department, and we actually do these things in house, you know, and most of the other brands don't. Mm-hmm. So what I think, the biggest controversy is all the brands that claim to be innovators, that claim to be out there doing things to change things, but yet when they come out with products, they're just a relabeled product, and you can even see what they are. You can see whose brand or product they copied. Uh-huh. You know, it's not like they were really trying to like change things here. They just were like, I know people like gold, I'm going to slap some gold on it. But we're trying to do things that are not able to be done by just saying like, change these colors, slap this logo. Even if you wanted to say material types and layouts and stuff, I can do technical drawings all day to tell companies how to, you know, a factory how to make my product. But until you're actually making it yourself, you don't have that complete control. And that's what we're doing here, is having complete control.
Okay. Yeah. And I mean, and so, you know, speaking of that, of the business of like I said, of combat sports equipment, what do you feel has been the thing that's opened your eyes the most? I guess, you know, you've talked about like, you know, getting into the business and you know, the differences between your product and other products and things like that. But what has been the thing that has opened your eyes the most of dealing with this business of combat sports? Is it like any other business, or is there things that are very unique to it that you've had to go through, or maybe walls that you've had to knock down, or things that you've had to face that you weren't expecting?
I think the biggest thing is relationships and, you know, dealing with ego. Like, everyone has an ego in the martial arts industry, be it fighters, be it, you know, brand owners, be it gym owners, and just learning how to accept different personality types and be able to work with everyone, because mm-hmm. my attitude outside of this, before I, you know, owned a business that had to communicate and be nice to everyone, I wasn't a very nice person. So I've really tried to be able to get along with everybody, even if it's someone that outside of the business, maybe we wouldn't hang out or anything like that, but mm-hmm. I can, you know, work with them. And in general, I think that's where, a lot of people need to focus on, is being able to deal with personality types that don't match theirs. So everybody wants to be the big shot within the martial arts industry. Like, every gym owner wants to have the best, most successful gym. And it makes sense. Why wouldn't you want to, you know, have the best? But it doesn't mean you have to be, you know, hating on anybody else or hoping someone else's demise or failure. You know, success is based on what you do, not what someone else does or fails on. Just because someone else fails doesn't mean you're going to do better. You know, there's some cases where that might have happened, like, oh, your competition's gone, so I'm doing great. But really, that's the reverse way of thinking to be successful in any sort of business or in life in general. Mm. So,
yeah, and I wanted to ask you a question, and this is just something that popped in my head. Do you get emails from people, like fighters, that just say, hey, sponsor me, like stuff like that?
All the time. And, you know, touching on that now, sponsorship is something people could learn the most about, because I could give two shits about my logo being on your shorts. I really don't care about a banner placement. I don't care if you call me 2 days before your fight and say, will you sponsor me for my fight? That doesn't mean anything to me either. The fight itself is actually the least important part of the sponsorship deal. Sponsorships are more about the athletes truly wanting and wearing your products throughout, you know, their times training, their camps, and, you know, spreading the word of the brand and actually believing in your products. You know, we're a company that only works with athletes that really wear our stuff. You know, we don't have monetary sponsorships, which some don't agree with, but we do it because if the only reason you're wearing our product is because we're paying you money, I don't believe in that anyways. It's not about having a logo on shorts. It's not about, you know, you going on social media and saying, hey, look what my sponsor sent me. It's more about using and showing that you care about these specific products in use. And also, when you have these products, it's something that you'd actually buy if it wasn't given to you.
Okay.
You know, if you're only using it because someone's giving it to you for free, then that doesn't say that much about the product itself or what you feel about the product. So we really love guys that already buy our products, and then we're going to possibly sponsor them because it shows they actually like our products anyways, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it makes sense, because if you're passionate about something, if you really like it, then you're going to spread the word. If you're doing it just because it's free or paying you, then you really don't give a shit except for, you know, what you're getting from it.
Right. And I ain't gonna lie, because on the other end, we have a bunch of our athletes that we work with that are sponsored by other companies that we set up with gear, and they use our product. And I think it's great for us because I get to see that these other companies are paying these guys and they're wearing our stuff instead. But when I look at it the other way around, that it's really a bad way to do business as a sponsored athlete. If you're going to take money or take product from someone else, you should appreciate it and you should do your end of the deal.
Can you tell us a little bit more, I guess if you're at liberty to do so, about the guys that you sponsor? I know you, have a lot more guys in MMA and things like that, but you know, anybody in Muay Thai and kickboxing, and some of the MMA fighters you can mention as well.
Sure, like specifically our guys right now for kickboxing, we have Richard Abraham, which we're kind of putting a lot behind, and he's one of my buddies. We actually, when I was at the grappling event this past weekend, he came out, met up, we hung up, drank some beers. That's kind of my thing, is drinking beers at events. So if you ever see me, feel free to buy me a beer, or I'll buy you a beer.
Yeah.
But yeah, we have a lot of MMA guys, you know, when it comes to like the Pettis brothers, a lot of guys from Duke's gym, a lot of guys from Rufus Sport, because that's where I came from. So I have a connection with these guys. They're friends, training partners. But we have guys that are outside that circle as well. You know, really, we probably sponsor like 60 plus athletes. So to rattle off names would be very hard for me to do. But all of them are great contributors, and they have an understanding of what we're actually looking to do. I think we had five guys fight this weekend, and all of them won on various regional promotions. So these are guys that maybe, you know, the general public hasn't heard of yet, but I think they're going to break through. A lot of them are at that, like, you know, 2-0, 3-0, 4-0, you know, 5-1 record types where they're just coming up. But we have a guy that was around from way back when I was training still and competing still, Chico Camus. He just fought again. He was let go by the UFC about 2 or 3 years ago. But I felt he was a top, you know, 10 or 15, you know, fighter in the world at the time, but they let him go anyways. And he's won, I think, 4 or 5 straight outside of the UFC now, and they should definitely bring him back at this point. But he just won on a show in Minnesota. And then we had a few other guys. We got a guy that's racking up all these regional promotional titles, you know, King of the Cage and I don't know, RFO and whatever these different organizations are that aren't like the largest ones outside of, you know, UFC, Bellator, ONE, whatever it may be when you're talking about MMA. So, where there's the biggest reach is where we try to sponsor guys, because we are trying to run a business here. I want our products to be seen, you know, in use by top level athletes, and those athletes to spread the word of the product and what they like. Nothing artificial. I don't want them to try to sell our products. I just want, if someone asks them like, hey, you know, how do you like those, to give them their honest opinion of our products, because the honest opinion is most of the time going to be good and going to spread the word in a positive way. And then we pick up new customers that way. So,
All right. So, you know, just I guess to sum up, you know, and I guess to shamelessly plug Combat Corner one last time. Tell us about how do you stay relevant and what sets Combat Corner apart from all the other brands.
So relevancy is us based on not following, you know, fickle trends, not you know, jumping on the bandwagon. We didn't go tribal. We didn't go full tribal. You know what I mean? We didn't go full Ed Hardy. We just kind of did our thing. We stayed classic. You see something we make. It's not going to be the most gaudy thing to catch your attention right then. But if you see it in 10 years, you wouldn't be embarrassed to be wearing it. So that's our idea for focus for continued growth and where you're never going to feel like, man, that's out of style. But I think one of the biggest things is my involvement in actually creating real products. Like I said, I know how to sew. We have a sewing division here. We're going to be starting to make USA-based products very soon on a high level. So it's something that really no one else is doing. I know Vinny said, I didn't think you were going to talk about that, and I wasn't going to talk about it. You know, It's one of the harder things to chase people on. So, you know, I feel we would do things that are new, and shortly thereafter, quite a few of the other brands would be doing those things. This involved a lot of work. I've been, you know, focused on making products here, not just on a short run level, but production level for like the last 6-7 years. So, if anyone hears it and they want to jump on doing that, that's great. Bring some production back to the United States. But it's not going to be something you're going to be able to do like that. It's going to take some time. So that's really what's going to set us apart in the future is, you know, our control. We're going to be able to make whatever we want, when we want, and to the highest levels, because I wasn't looking to bring production here and do it at a level on par or worse than what we're already getting from our overseas factories. I'm looking to have the ability to make the best products we possibly can.
All right, man. So thank you very much for coming on the show. Definitely Combat Corner for everybody that's listening. Definitely check these guys out. Vinny can attest to how good the products are. Definitely, obviously, we've heard about Combat Corner from a multitude of different coaches and friends of ours. I've used some of your stuff when I went to the coaches clinic at CSA. In California. So I know very, you know, Kieran talks a lot about Combat Corner as well. Duke Rufus. Yeah,
shout out to Kieran.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. So he talks a lot about you guys as well. And I know a lot of people are now realizing the quality of Combat Corner and what you guys are doing. So, you know, I mean, I appreciate you coming on the show. I appreciate, you know, giving us your input and kind of telling us a little bit about what goes on behind the scenes of, you know, at least from an American standpoint, what goes behind the scenes of building a brand, you know. And as you said, it's not reinventing the wheel, because a glove is a glove, and people try to come out with these, like, I guess, kitschy sort of different ways of making gloves. But at the end of the day, it's just about, you know, punching somebody in the face and making it functional and also protecting your hand. So it's not like you're reinventing it completely, but also, you know, just that the brand's quality and it'll last long. And you know, you're giving us a lot of people insight into, I guess, into the business that they don't really look behind the scenes of. So thanks for coming on, man. We appreciate it. And, you know, best of luck in the future. And we wish you nothing but success with Combat Corner. And I will be sure to get some of your gloves so I can try them out for myself, because I have not. And I want to be honest with you. So I'm going to give them a shot. And
I appreciate that. I appreciate you having me on the show. Appreciate you giving me a shot with my products. And then also, I also wish the best for this podcast. I think it's cool. I think it's something that helps contribute to the sport. So
yeah,
keep up the great work, guys.
So where can everybody, you know, contact you or get your stuff from, Dan? What's some information on that?
All right. Our website is combatcorner.com. We are going to run a coupon code specifically for the Striking Corner podcast that we're doing right now. We're going to give you 20% off. Just use the coupon code Striking Corner. And I'll probably run that for about a month. I don't know what day this is going to air, so you guys tell me, and then I'll make sure that it's a month-long thing. Anyone that uses that code, 20% off. And yeah, catch us on Instagram, on Twitter, Facebook. They're all at Combat Corner. Okay. And if you haven't given our HMIT line a try and you're a purist in Muay Thai and you only use, you know, Twins, Boone, Raja, whatever, I've been to these various factories. I physically visit them and work with a lot of different factories on products, and I can tell you the level of these products will either match or beat all of those brands. So give it a try, and then let everybody know about it after you find out that's the truth.
I will do that because I am one of those guys. I'm one of those purists.
I will definitely vouch for that because I have HMIT gloves and shin guards.
Nice,
and they are better.
Yeah.
And we're sticking with real cowhide here. We're not going the full route of all this switch to skin tech stuff. So there's nothing wrong with skin tech. So I'm not going to, you know, rag on it. But when it comes down to a premium, you know, glove that you're going to be punching people in the face and hitting stuff with, I feel it should be leather. So,
okay. Yeah. Throw in leather.
I know we're ending the show, but I'm sticking my two cents in when it comes to leather skin tech battles.
So. Go for it.
go for it, man. No, man, thank you for, you know, like I said, once again, thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for, you know, your support of the show. So guys, remember, Dan just mentioned Striking Corner is going to be the coupon code. It's going to be running for a month. This podcast actually drops, just to let you know, Dan, it's going to drop on Tuesday, which will be October 3rd. And that's about it. So it'll run from October 3rd to November 3rd. I guess Striking Corner coupon code, go to combatcorner.com, get yourself some high quality gear. I will be doing it, and I'll mention it on our next podcast, Dan. I'll tell you what I experienced.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll give you a good shout out there. But no, thanks for coming on again, man. And all right, everybody, so make sure to check out Combat Corner, and that's it. All right, everybody. So that was Dan LeSavage from Combat Corner. Definitely, I know Vinny's been talking to him for a little bit. He's been talking to Dan. He's known him a little bit longer than I have. So this was actually my first time really sitting down and speaking with Dan and learning more about Combat Corner. I've heard so much about Combat Corner from coaches and friends of ours that have been using their products, and it's really cool to see that he's really passionate about his approach to better gear. And it's awesome also because it's coming from the point of view of not somebody who's just a businessman, but who has experienced the sport. He's fought professionally in MMA, he's done Muay Thai, he's done kickboxing, so he knows the sport. And as you can tell, he's really well versed. Even off air, like when we got off air with him, he was really well, like, there's a lot of little, you know, obviously nuances about textiles and different things about that, and like certain ways of how the glove fits and everything that he's really into. So it's good to have somebody like that really passionate about gear for combat. So check him out at combatcorner.com, and that's pretty much it. We were glad to have him on. And Vinny, you want anything you want to add?
Follow me on Instagram.
Oh, yeah. Make sure to follow Vinny on Instagram on his quest. All right, guys. So we're going to tie this up real quick here. Just wanted to let you guys know, check out, obviously, strikingcorner.com, which is our main website. Also, check us out on social media at Striking Corner, which is where we're most active. I really love posting on Instagram. I think it's the most active right now in social media. So check us out at Striking Corner on Instagram. We are also on Twitter at Striking Corner, on Facebook, facebook.com/Striking Corner. You can contact me personally or get my personal Instagram is Eric Rivera_TSC. And Vinny obviously has already said his, Vinny Scotto on Instagram. That is VinnyScotto. And help him get to his 10,000 followers. Besides that, guys, as you heard Dan mention on the podcast, he actually mentioned that he is going to be giving everybody a discount that listens to the Striking Corner, 20% off Combat Corner gear when you use the promo code Striking Corner when you go to combatcorner.com. That is going to start The podcast drops on October 3rd, which is Tuesday, October 3rd. That will run for a month, October 3rd to November 3rd. We'll post a little promo on Instagram as well, so you guys can be reminded of that. But check him out, guys. Really good guy. It's an American company doing some really, really good Thai gear. They have their own factory in Thailand as well, as you heard on the podcast. So really high quality stuff. Check them out. Also check out our good friends at 3Leopard Liniment, 3leopard.com. Use the promo code STRIKING for 15% off some of the best liniment oil I've used. And really, that's about it, guys. If you have any inquiries business-wise or anything, make sure to contact us at info@strikingcorner.com. You can contact me personally at eric@strikingcorner.com or vinny@strikingcorner.com. We have plenty of ways for you guys to get in touch with us. Thank you for listening.
Not the place to contact me.
Oh, yeah.
We've been through this.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Do not contact Vinny through vinny@strikingcorner.com, please. Contact him only via Instagram. I'm sorry about that. All right, guys. So that is it for our podcast today. Thank you for listening. As always, I really appreciate your support. Also, you know, shout out to Dan for telling everybody about the podcast as well and showing his support. So that's about it, guys. We will be back in another 2 weeks with another podcast. And thank you once again for supporting the Striking Corner. Talk to y'all soon.
Bye, guys.
You've been listening to The Striking Corner with Eric Rivera and Vinny Scotto, your source for Muay Thai and kickboxing news worldwide.